Thank you very much, David. The background on the Toby Keith. I'm not sure everybody knows the story on that. Yeah. Yeah. The last selection that David played is by a country singer named Toby Keith, and that song was supposed to be performed on the 4th of July on ABC, an ABC TV special, and Peter Jennings reportedly decided, this is not a joke, reportedly decided that it was not appropriate. And so they canceled the Toby Keith segment of ABC television, which, of course, special, which, of course, instantly made the record a huge success because everybody heard about it and went out and bought it. And
because of the last verse, there's juxtaposition of two words called boot and ass,
right,
that Peter Jennings got upset about.
Yes, he said, we will... Toby, the song says, it's addressed to Osama bin Laden, obviously, and it says, we will put a boot up your ass. That's the American way. And so so Peter Jennings did not like this. I mean, and so then they interviewed Toby Keith about this, and he said, Peter Jennings, he's Canadian, ain't he? Quote unquote. Yeah. Great stuff. Just a couple of other, real quick about country music. I'm a great fan of it also. there's so many, it goes way back. Originally, you go back to Okie from Muskogee and so on, just tremendous stuff. But one of my favorites that Dave and I talked about is a group called Confederate Railroad. And they came out with an album about 10 years ago, and I think I can remember these lyrics exactly. It's called She Never Cried When Old Yeller Died. And the lyrics go as follows. She never cried when old Yeller died. She wasn't washed in the blood of the Lamb. She never stood up for the Star-Spangled Banner. She wasn't a John Wayne fan. That just said it all. Now, we've had speakers here who are speaking sort of counter their area of academic expertise, or at least apart from it. But that is not the case. We have an exception now. We have a speaker, very erudite speaker indeed, who is going to address our subject within the framework of his expertise. He is Professor Carson Holloway, who is now at the University of Nebraska at Omaha. He is a classicist and has written widely on many aspects of political philosophy and theory. He is going to address, as I understand it from my brief conversation with him a moment ago, the question of modern popular music and some of its tendencies within a Platonic framework. And I invite him to the podium right now to do just that. Professor Holloway.
Thank you. my oratorical capacities are not considerable, and I'm afraid that if they were 10 times as considerable, I probably couldn't make Plato as sexy as Shania Twain. But I'll do my best. Have some sympathy. I guess I would begin from an agreement with Professor Forte's assumption that there's a lot of depravity in popular music. I don't want to talk about that and the arguments on either side of it, however, because it seems to me that perhaps it's no longer very interesting to explore the arguments on each side of that controversy, because they're now very well known and even well worn. Critics of pop music accused of glorifying mindless violence and irresponsible sex, and the defenders invoke the sacredness of the First Amendment or of creativity in art, or maybe taking a lower road, say, well, this is just a joke that nerdish parents and social commentators just don't get. Since those arguments are so well rehearsed, I thought it might be interesting to think about why our popular musical culture tends in such a direction, Why are the young attracted so powerfully and in such large numbers to such apparently ugly music? And why are the critics so unsuccessful at halting our nation's musical culture's progress in this direction? And I try to shed some light on that question by turning to Plato's account of music and its role in the proper rearing of the human soul. Plato's understanding of the soul is made up of three elements, is well known, right? He says, in the Republic, there is appetite or desire, meaning that part of us that desires bodily gratification or bodily pleasures. There is, secondly, spiritedness, that part of us that's capable of anger and self-assertion and that desires glory. And Plato says there is reason or intellect, that part of us that's capable of perceiving the truth and that desires to perceive the truth. His understanding of the health of the soul is also well known. The Republic contends that that soul is properly ordered and is happy in which reason rules, in which the wisdom-loving part is free to contemplate the truth of things and to direct the actions of the whole soul in accordance with that truth. Well, unfortunately, however, the nature of the soul, as we all know, is not such that that order emerges spontaneously. On the contrary, Plato indicates that in the ordinary course of things, spiritedness, passion, and appetite are much more powerful than reason. What is needed then is culture, or some kind of cultivation of the soul, that forms it with a view to its true health and happiness. And that is, Plato says, what's needed is music, or at least the right kind of education in music, which can tame the passions, tame the appetites, tame spiritedness in such a way as to allow reason to rule in the human soul. Music is prominent in Plato's account of the education of the soul because he says it has a natural power to speak to the soul, even at its most immature and impressionable stage of development. There's a passage in Book 3 of the Republic where he says, rhythm and harmony lay hold of the soul most powerfully, bringing grace and gracelessness with them, depending on what kind of rhythm and harmony it is, before the soul is capable of even understanding rational speech. And I think, the gist of the Republic's teaching is that the rational element in the human soul longs, by its nature, to comprehend the intelligible beauty of nature or of the cosmos, and to conform our lives to that beauty through acts of moral nobility. And the right kind of music, by its sensible and pleasant depiction of that intelligible beauty, elicits and strengthens this longing in the soul, and by doing so tends to quiet the other more immediately felt and passionate desires for bodily satisfaction and spirited self-assertion. And such a musical education is good for us, Plato would contend, because intellect and its moral and philosophical longings are, even though they're not the most spontaneously powerful part of us, still the most profound part of us. They are more truly us than these other elements. And the absence of such an education of music, or perhaps worse, an education in passion-inflaming, spiritedness-inflaming music that tends to silence the reason, that's bad for us because it alienates us from our true selves, Plato suggests. Such a rearing tends to the worst kind of tyranny, right? Tyranny in the soul itself, or the rule of the lower, less human parts of the soul over the higher and most human element. And such a life, the Republic suggests, is not only bad as judged by philosophy, but it's bad as experienced by those who live it. It's a life, he says, of constant desire, constant gratification, constant self-reproach, the latter arising because of the soul's indestructible sense that it's not pursuing what it truly wants. Okay, what light does this account shed on the current direction of popular musical taste? I would contend that the trend in pop music toward the disturbingly obscene and violent, and the receptivity of the young to such trends results from our culture's neglect of the musical education of souls, and the consequent uneducated groping of the young toward the good. Say, our dominant culture is amusical, both in the obvious sense that it doesn't take musical character formation very seriously, but also in the more profound sense that the models of good character that are presented to young people do not really admit of a musical presentation. You know, they're prosaic. I think of an example of this in the disputes over rap music and its influence on the young. One of the critics of that music said, why can't rap music talk about a black man going to work downtown wearing a business suit? And the answer is kind of obvious. It's boring and, not very poetic. It's not the kind of thing that would lend itself to a musical presentation. In other words, kind of modern commercial society's good life that we present to the young is a life of enlightened self-interest in the service of the desires of the body. Such a life contains nothing sufficiently beautiful to compel the admiration of the young, nothing capable of satisfying these deeper, though less immediately felt longings of the soul, of the rational part of the soul, for moral nobility, philosophic insight. I think you could argue that confronted with the prospect of life in such a society, the young rebel against its constraints. There must be more to life than this, they think, and of course they're right, but since they have not received this Platonic rearing of the soul in music that draws out reason's longings, they have no accurate sense of what that more is, and so they turn to the most obvious thing, like overindulgence of the pleasures of the body. Bored with modernity's sober and cautious pursuit of pleasure, they turn to kind of the reckless pursuit of pleasure, especially sexual pleasure, and the kind of music that celebrates that kind of life. Okay? But that's not the last stage in the youthful souls and pop music's progress under these conditions of modernity, because sexual overindulgence, in the end, proves no more satisfying to the soul's true longings than the kind of timid bourgeois pleasure-seeking that they recoiled from in the first place. So once again, the young seek for more, and once again, in the absence of any kind of proper cultivation of the soul and reason, they have no idea where to look. And so this time, since they have exhausted the body as a source of fulfillment, but know nothing about reason, nobility, philosophy, where do they turn? Well, what's left? The spirited part of the soul, the much more interesting and dangerous regions of spiritedness. And hence you get the emergence of a new and much more, even more disturbing popular music, one that adds violence to sex and is duly obscene by celebrating both unrestrained physical gratification in the realm of sex, but also the joys of uncontrolled, spirited self-assertion. And it seems that indeed the apparent summit of the new rap and rock music's perverted genius is that it doesn't just add spiritedness to sex, but in fact combines them by glorifying rape. Right? You can gratify the body with the aid of another person, and at the same time you can gratify the spirited element by asserting your control over or degrading another human being. Why then are contemporary critics of this kind of music so powerless to resist it? I think because, on the Platonic account, they fail to offer the soul what it really wants. I mean, the typical criticism of pop music is based on a defense, I would say it's a criticism of spiritedness coming from a defense of the body, right? So that's why the most common complaint about popular music isn't that it's not elevated, that it's not beautiful, but it's just, look, it's about murder and rape. Isn't that scary? I don't want to be murdered or raped, right? It's the critics appeal from the tyranny of the spirited element to the tyranny of the desiring part of the soul. The only positive alternative they offer is a life of kind of easy contentment and safety. But that's precisely what the young have already intuited is not really satisfying and from which they're blindly fleeing. So on this Platonic analysis, our sexually and violently obscene pop music appears as an increasingly unwholesome but still understandable reaction on the part of the young to the spiritual and moral poverty of what modernity has to offer. And the irony is that as an alternative to that thrilling barbarism, the critics of such music really offer nothing more than kind of more of the same kind of boring, musical soullessness and calculating hedonism of modernity. So I think Plato's prescription for our pathologies of the soul and of music and of culture would be the attempt to restore or create a musical culture of human excellence rather than just fighting a rearguard action against this musical culture of human depravity. That's my remarks, so I'll conclude there.